Pinbot dares you to survive. And welcome to Nostalgia, a chronological exploration of every NES game released in North America. I'm Mike.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Joe.
Guys, Pinbot, it is a conversion of the pinball machine by the same name. I don't know if you guys have ever seen a pinball machine in the flesh. I'm sure we've talked about that in another episode. But the Pinbot machine, maybe one of the more well-known pinball machines, if that's even a thing in this day and age.
I've never heard of this one. I mean, I remember seeing, like, in more recent video game versions of pinball machines, like, you know, the ones on the PS3 and that kind of era. I've seen, like, you know, the Magic one and the whatever, but I've never heard of Pinbot.
Theater of Magic.
Yeah, Theater of Magic, that one.
Yeah, I know very little about pinball, and Pinbot is no exception. I never, until right now, knew that was a real machine.
Right, and so that brings up a good question before we get into this game, because, Sean, you were having me think there for a second. Like, you know Theater of Magic and Tales of the Arabian Nights because we both played Pinball Arcade on the PlayStation 3. I basically forced you to play it, but...
You did force me, yes.
You know, that's why you know those games, but those aren't even, like, some of the most well-known pinball machines. They're well-known by pinball fanatics, but, like, what is a well-known pinball machine? Like, even for arcades, right? Like, most people know Pong, Pac-Man, Donkey Kong, but could you name a pinball machine that everybody knows?
There's gotta be, like, a Simpsons one that's everywhere.
There is.
Yeah.
Simpsons Pinball Party.
I feel like that's gotta be up there. I'm sure there's a Star Wars or Star Trek. I think the Star Trek one's probably pretty popular. Those sound like, you know, the entry level, I'm trying to get into pinball machines.
There was somewhere in my hometown, I don't remember where there was always a pinball machine that was an X-Files themed pinball machine. I just remember it was always playing the X-Files music.
That tracks.
So that's my experience with pinball, is an unknown area where there was an X-Files. It's kind of actually very X-Files-y. It's like a lost, forgotten area of my life where there was an X-Files theme playing pinball machine.
And it's funny because those are pinball machines that probably feel comfortable to play because you're familiar with the IP, and that is definitely what pinball machines now have become. There have been very expensive, like, Pinball Avengers and Pinball Wizard of Oz, and I'm not joking. Those are two very recent examples of, like, very decked out, super modern pinball machines that have, like, amazing features that pinball machines just couldn't do until recently. And it's like, there's not really, to go back to, like, the Pac-Man example, there isn't a pinball of Pac-Man where, like, it's just every game is exactly the same. So it's more like pinball as a concept, not necessarily, like, one pinball machine that everybody knows. And so it's kind of weird to have, like, Pinbot be translated to video game form, right? Like, to pick this one and be like, all right, like, everybody loves this pinball machine so much that we should make a video game version of it where you can just play it all the time.
I mean, even though I can't speak to whether that's true or not, I do prefer this to the, I guess, like, made-for-TV movie versions of pinball machines that we've seen previously. Because the things that I associate with a good pinball machine are actually here now. Like, in the previous ones, like, you know, just pinball or rockin' ball or whatever, it was generic to a fault, and everything was just bumpers, and it was, like, weirdly symmetrical, and there was none of that, like, stuff that just felt, I guess the word would be, it wasn't, like, satisfying to watch. Like, you know, if you're playing an actual pinball machine, there's those things that are just satisfying. This one actually has, like, areas that have functions that are more than just, like, hit this stuff for points. And there's the tracks that go into loops. And, like, that really is more of a physical thing. And you're like, oh, it feels good to get that pinball up in that track and that... You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, it feels very analog.
Yes.
Oddly, even though it's obviously all, you know, all digital. But probably because it was designed first as you know, by people who actually design pinball machines in an actual physical space. Not to say that I know that, you know, the people who made Rock'n'Ball or Pinball for the NES weren't those same people, but it just feels like it wasn't worried about being a video game when it was first designed, and then it was translated to a video game. So then either way, you still have, like, a good pinball machine because you weren't trying to do both at the same time.
Now, Pinbot has a really cool motif behind it in both the gameplay sense and in the idea of, like, what it looks like as a pinball machine, where, you know, in a loose way, the pinball machine itself is this, like, robot that you are playing against that talks to you, and as you complete things, like, it says things back to you and tells you what to do. That feels very alive and fresh for the pinball genre, too. Like, that wasn't something that was being done before Pinbot. You had just, like, the, you know, the scoreboard with your current score, and if you got, like, a multi-ball or something, like, it would say it on there. But to have, like, the idea of the machine itself be alive is a pretty cool idea. So how well did that translate into the video form?
I think it worked very well. Are you saying that this is the first pinball machine, like, physical pinball machine with, like, missions? Not missions, but, like, with actual, like, it's trying to tell some kind of pinball story?
No. I'm saying it itself, like, the machine is, like, a, you know, like, it's supposed to be the character,
yeah,
right?
I see. Okay. I mean, I think that this was pulled off pretty well here. I also just like, because this isn't a thing that we really saw in the previous pinball games, that it did have those, like, achievements, I guess, that you're trying to do. And adding that with the personality that I've come to associate with, like, good pinball machines, I appreciate that that was there, and it was, you know, it talked to you, and, you know, it's not often that we see actual recorded lines playing on the NES, so that gave it some authenticity, too. I liked it.
Yeah, I appreciated it, but I'll be honest, I most of the time didn't know what it was trying to say to me.
That's because you couldn't understand the speech, Joe?
Yes.
Yeah. And to be fair, you know, it's pretty cool always to have, and it's not the first example in the NES, but to have some kind of synthesizer speech form for a character. But the weird thing isn't how it's saying those lines or, you know, the delivery from a voiceover standpoint. It's that the gameplay itself is interrupted while the speech is happening. It's like it couldn't handle doing both. And I feel like that's where it loses me a bit, that it, obviously in a real pinball arcade cabinet, it wouldn't, like, freeze your ball in location and wait for Pinbot to finish what it was saying. It would just continue on and you would have to, like, listen in and be engaged. Whereas here it's like your ball freezes wherever it may be, and now you're just, you know, talking to Pinbot.
That's funny because I guess I didn't really feel that way, only because it makes sense that there'd be, like, a dramatic pause during a line in a video game sense. So it didn't feel as confusing that, like, oh, this is breaking my simulation of a real pinball machine. But now I totally understand that if you're familiar with the machine, that would not really work out for you.
Yeah, but in video game form, though, there is a perk there, too, where because it pauses, like, you might have paused it in a great location to, like, take a pause for a second and be able to then think about, like, where you're going to lock for the flipper. Like, is this thing going straight down into the gutter, or am I going to be able to, you know, scoop it back up? There is one thing, though, more so than the synthesized speech, more so than the translation from pinball machine to video game, that is a questionable design decision that I feel like we need to get out of the way. And that is something that no other pinball game thus far has had to do. So it is a choice.
The split screen?
And that is the split screen. They have made it so that at any time, no matter where your ball is on the, let's be honest, it's not a giant screen, but like wherever it is on that screen, you will always see the bottom half of your split where your flippers are travels up with you and then eventually just seamlessly connects back to where it actually is on the board. And it definitely takes some getting used to. You can calibrate for it, but overall, I just found it to be unnecessary, especially because it's not, the ball isn't going so fast that it's surprising to be like, oh, and now there's my flippers. Like, it wasn't that zoomed in on the ball. The ball wasn't moving that fast. I never felt like I needed to be anticipating it, like, at that speed. So the split screen between the flippers and the rest of the action just felt unnecessary and a little jarring.
I'll agree.
Yeah, at first I thought that the split screen, well, like, initially I was like, well, what is actually the point of this? Like, you know, it's cool to be able to see it, but I'm not going to need to know where, like, I know where the flippers are, and I'm not going to need to see them until the ball gets close to them. So it felt like it was taking up a little bit of the screen. And then when it introduced a second ball, I was like, okay, this makes sense. So I'll be able to kind of like watch my flippers if a ball goes down towards there and also watch the other ball. But when the second ball is on the screen, the camera doesn't follow it up. Like, you're still on the flippers. So I don't know what the purpose of this, of the split screen is at any point.
I mean, I agree that it was definitely jarring at first. When there is a multi-ball, it will track the ball, but it'll only track the one that's closest to the bottom of the screen. So maybe you just always had one that was lurking near the flippers, so then it never tracked back up.
Well, but even so, if it only tracks the one that's closest to the bottom of the screen, it's still unnecessary.
Because then you never get to see the top of the machine if they did that during like regular play, and there's stuff up there.
Yeah, but what, if you're not tracking the one that's further away from the flippers, then that could still happen anyways. And if you're only tracking the one that's close to the flippers, then you would still see the flippers before it would reach them, you know?
But if both are up at the top, then it would have moved. You know what I mean?
Not really, because that is still what it's doing without two balls, you know? It's like, it feels like that's backwards. What it should be, unless I'm missing something, what it should be is that it should only track the one that's further from the flippers. Since you can always see the flippers in the split screen, the one that's closer to the flippers wouldn't need to be tracked.
Well, I mean, I feel like that wouldn't work out, because then you would, you don't really have too much lead time at the bottom, so you would just have a ball, like, fly by, I feel like. I don't know.
But that's what happens when there's only one ball.
I guess maybe I'm not really understanding what you're saying.
it's hard to describe it. Maybe I'm not describing it right. But like, if the camera is only following the ball that is lower, and the split screen shows the lower part of the screen, it's like there's like two things that are benefiting the lower ball and nothing that's paying any attention to the higher ball. Like, that's why I feel like the camera should be following the ball that's higher if you're going to have the split screen that shows the lower portion of the screen.
I think the whole split screen thing is just like so that you always kind of have a handle of what you're actually doing, because you don't have direct control over anything up top. So and it would just, I guess it would just feel strange to, you know, you're pressing buttons, you're technically doing something, but it's not being shown on screen. I feel like this was sort of this was always going to be a design problem when they decided to make something that, oh, I zoomed out too far, now it looks like crap. Like, they had to find a way to make this look good and also be able to display, like, actual information. And they can't just have it locked to the bottom, because that would then just, you just don't see anything up top. You may as well only have half the pinball game. But you're also not, like, the scoreboard is there. Whatever you're actually inputting is there. I think it was the lesser of two evils from a design perspective.
I mean, I can see that too. I agree with that, but I guess I just think that they chose to follow the wrong ball with the camera.
What's funny is like, no matter where you net out on this conversation between the two of you, which has definitely overstayed its welcome.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, we haven't heard from Mike in long enough. You know, the people want to hear from Mike.
No, about whether which ball it should be tracking. The real question is, why do it at all? Did it ever bother you with other NES games?
That's the question I was trying to answer.
Right, right. I'm just saying, like, think about it. Other NES games were able to handle this without needing this weird, all of a sudden, black bar line that says, like, oh, just so you know, like, the screen isn't, like, folding in on itself. Like, the flippers are still down here, and you're just looking at what's happening up there, and then all of a sudden it just locks perfectly back into the same view, and you're like, oh, right, even though I saw my ball falling back down, looking like it was about to approach my flippers aren't at the bottom of the screen yet. Like, they need to move down appropriately to lock back into place, and then I can hit them. It almost makes timing more questionable than if they were just stuck down there.
Yeah, at first it was a little, like, jarring to me, even though I am, like, impressed, because you just don't see split-screen anything on the NES very often. So, like, that was kind of, I guess it was cool that they were able to do that. But I don't know. I don't think I ever had a problem in other pinball games. And once I got used to this, it really wasn't a big deal, but it was jarring at first.
I think I prefer this to the alternative of just always tracking the ball, because I don't know. You don't even really notice it after you're playing for a bit.
And I didn't think about that, Joe, but you're right. There is a novelty to the to the split screen effort here, and just like thinking about how does that even work? Like, how are they doing that? Like, because, you know, there's only so many sprites that are allowed on a screen, and like, how are they tricking the system? So I appreciate that. All right, so, you know, the actual game, if you will, is that you're not like trying to disable the pinbot or something like that. Like, this isn't a fight against a robot. The player starts basically traveling the solar system, and you start on Pluto and try to hit enough targets and do enough things to continue to move around the solar system to get to the sun. And you're awarded bonuses for doing those kinds of things. If you get to like Saturn, Jupiter, Mars, or the sun, you get like an extra ball, which is kind of cool. There's a 5x5 grid that's supposed to be like Pinbot's visor. And hitting those kinds of things and hitting the visor requires, like, it basically, like, does other things that open up other layers and levels to the game. So there's a lot more going on here than just, like, as Sean was saying earlier, here's two bumpers, three targets, a bunch more bumpers up top that score some points, and one singular ramp. There's actually, like, things that you can do and selective bonuses that will show up as you continue to play. So rather than break down each thing you can do, I guess I just want to know, did it hold your attention more because there was an ever-changing set of, like, now you're on this planet? Like, you know, was that information first conveyed to you in a way that felt appropriate? And was it more intriguing than, say, the rock and roll 50s aesthetic that we saw in our other pinball game?
I think that this made it more engaging. I think with as much as I do like these pinball games, like they really couldn't hold my attention for that long. They were just kind of 5 minutes here or there. If I do well enough, I'll play for as long as this ball lasts. But this one I actually played for a while because there actually were like objectives, and like you're actually aiming for things that are more than just like points. Like, it's almost like what will the machine do next, because things do change over time. They change more than a pinball machine actually would in real life sometimes, but there's just the different modes. Like, okay, now this like wall has opened up, and this is where I can lock balls, and then you get the multi-ball this way. Like, it was always like something new that you could do if you had like the patience or the skill to hit.
Yeah, I agree. I was always kind of checking out like what's going to come next, and it left me a little torn on you know, a lot of times I talk about on pinball episodes, which is weird that we've had so many of them by now, but I talk about how like, why isn't it doing something video gamey that a pinball machine couldn't do? And this does some of that, but before even getting into that, like, there are a lot of things that are changing in here that I'm like, oh, that's really cool, because I'm imagining how a real pinball machine must be doing this. Like, oh, they're like, you know, like they're unlocking this part for you now, or the color scheme is changing, but it's not just changing completely, like, because it's a video game and it's able to just do that. It's like, it's in a lot of cases simulating what I imagine the actual pinball machine does. And part of that actually just kind of makes me sad that I'm not actually just playing that machine, because, like, that's really cool. The analogness of it is really cool. But then on the other hand, I do appreciate that it did some things. Like, it gave me a reason to play the video game version rather than play the pinball machine. And, like, of course, the obvious reason is because not everybody has this pinball machine in their living room. But it, you know, there are some times where I'm like, okay, they did some video gamey things. And then there are other times where I'm like, it's doing really cool things that are clearly from the original game. And it kind of bums me out that I don't get to see those, you know? So, like, I don't know. I guess I don't know exactly what I'm saying. I guess I'm saying, like,
it's an imperfect simulation, right?
Yeah. And the things that I'm impressed with, I'm a lot of the stuff is I'm impressed with the actual pinball machine, but I'm not sure that, like, I still might be of the opinion that, like, if you're going to give me a video game version of it, just go crazy. But that's just me.
Yeah, on the same, like, not the same thing, but in the same vibe, like, this is the first time that I'm seeing, I guess only because this is one of the first games that it's trying to actually simulate physics to, like, this kind of degree. But, like, the first time that video game physics are wonky, because it's obviously, it's got the actual pinbot machine, and you know how a pinball machine should work in real life, and then just the way, like, it gets caught on things, and sometimes it feels like the ball clips where it shouldn't, and those are very forgiving things in, like, a made-for-video game pinball machine, that, because it's, like, usually, like, a flat plane, and it's not based on anything, but because this is based on something, like, the ball getting stuck in certain areas and just, like, not behaving correctly actually stands out, unlike most NES games, so that was also weird.
Yeah, you guys are giving me a lot I want to unpack, so I guess I'm gonna just try to go one at a time and see if we can all stay on the same track here. First thing that was brought up was a question of mine that I'm not sure if it was answered or not. Don't have to give a whole, like, spiel or anything, but I guess I just want to know, were the objectives and the progression clear to you guys, or was it still just like, this is pinball and I'm just going to keep hitting this ball into things? Like, I don't understand why I'm getting the multi-ball or why I moved to another level of the machine, or why I'm moving from planet to planet. Like, were those objectives clear to you guys?
Yeah, that I was saying that it was clear that there were objectives, and I appreciate that there were actually objectives, like, as opposed to the previous games we played.
Yeah, I'd say some of them became clear to me over time, like, as I'm testing things out, or it's like, yeah, there's a giant arrow pointing, like, go here, you know, and there's, like, things like that where I'm like, oh, can I knock all of these things down and stuff, but it's really me trial and error. That's how I am with pinball always. I never have any idea what's going on. So relatively, yes, it was clear to me.
Yeah, and this is, you know, with pinball, it is a learned thing. There isn't, I guess, just like any video game too, like, it could use a tutorial in a sense, and Pinball Arcade and some other pinball effects and stuff like that have actually worked those into their video versions where, like, you can actually learn about what you should be doing on the machine before you ever play it, which is probably a good idea. And I'm sure the manual covered it too, but it's not so complicated here as in newer machines. Sean, you followed up on a great topic of the physics of the machine because, you know, pinball physics do matter in terms of realism and everything. And I feel like even the example we've been using on the PS3, the Pinball Arcade, is much more forgiving than real-life pinball, and probably why you and I bothered to stay on it for longer than just a single day, because it did make us better pinball players than playing on actual machines where we're just giving up quarters to the loose ball that just doesn't go our way and there's nothing we could have done about it. But here, it did feel, as you were suggesting, a little more forced or fake than usual, where, like, sometimes I even felt like, you know, the ramps were acting almost like vacuums, that just, like, there's no way that my shot had enough pull to get around, but it just did it anyway. Or like, yeah, I totally should have gone down the gutter ramp, but instead it just like lucks out and puts it back into the flipper zone. Like, you know, some of these were kind of blatant.
Yeah, like when you're trying to give the ball a little break at when it's coming through the chute, I don't know if there's a pro pinballer term for that. Usually when I do that on a real machine, it's like hit or miss whether I actually do the intended thing, and sometimes it just ramps off the my paddle and goes where I don't want it to be. But when I did it here, it was like a perfect, like, oh, that's just going to stop it right where I need it. It's going to settle the ball down, and then I can do like a more precise shot with it. And I feel like that was too perfect.
I think I'm kind of like still just impressed, you know, like to like have any like super positive or negative. I guess I don't know enough about like real pinball. I don't play enough of it that like really the physics stood out to me.
Well, you bring up a good point there, Joe. Like, it is a video game form, so does it really matter? Like, is the goal to be faithful to the Pinbot arcade version, or is the goal to make it, you know, more video gamey and fun? In which case, I do think they succeeded in the goal. Like, you know, it didn't make me... I wasn't so bothered that the physics weren't accurate that I was like, I can't play this. It wasn't like that. Instead, it was just like, huh, this works differently. I think the biggest example of, huh, this works differently is that one of the first tricks, I don't pretend to be an expert at pinball machines. I suck at real pinball machines. I just know that. But one of the first tricks you learn if you want to get better at pinball is to keep your flippers up if the ball is coming down, you know, slow enough. So this way you can lock the ball and decide when you want
to, like... That's what I was trying to describe, yeah.
Right, let your flipper, like, you know, so this way you can roll the ball down and hit it at the exact angle. And this game doesn't really give a crap about where you choose to, like, launch that ball on that flipper. And I don't mean that in the sense of, like, if you launch it at the very end, it just will still go to the opposite direction. Like, of course it will. But it doesn't really, like, have an exact spot where, like, yeah, hit it in this exact spot and you'll get the ramp. Like, that never happens in this game. And so that is, like, an oddball thing of, like, well, in a real pinball machine, like, it would totally do that. But who cares, right? To Joe's point, like, it's not trying to be the actual, or you could go play the actual machine somewhere else. You're playing the video game form where things are a little more loose and fun. And so I'm not saying that this game has to be a perfect pinball simulation to be on the essential games list.
Yeah, but I don't know. I felt like the like lack of exact precision on like something happening exactly the same way every time if you're doing it the same. Like, I know that that is literally what would happen like in the physical world, but I think that, I don't know, when I'm playing pinball, it's like my brain does not operate quickly enough to like actually be exactly the same every time, you know? Whereas like, just because there's so many, you know, an actual pinball has so much, you know, well, I don't know, like entropy or whatever you'd call it, that it's like too hard to, for you to actually be exact. But it feels like maybe on the NES, because it's like these pixels, if they were to make it like that, it might be easier to cheese it and to just be like, oh yeah, as soon as I see it hit that like pixel of the thing, I can hit it and it'll always do exactly the same thing, which I know is literally realistic, but I just feel like for human reflexes maybe isn't as realistic.
I think that if they actually tried to do there has to be some sort of randomness just in the game, because if it was trying to be as precise as possible and the same input gave the same result, this would probably be a much less fun game to play, because you would figure that out, and there just isn't enough variation in that entropy as a real pinball machine, which is what gives those, like, there's that combination of kind of chaos, but also if you're really good, you can hit those shots. I think if they tried to bring that down to a lesser, like, reality, a lesser simulation of reality, it would just be too simple.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And then for the last point, something Joe was alluding to, but rightfully didn't want to jump into it too early into the show, there is a video game format here of like taking it further than the actual pinball machine did. And I don't want to spoil the Pinbot arcade machine, but it doesn't have six levels that you can go through in some kind of crazy 3D format, or like maybe it would like slip off the like reveal the next sub layer or something. That doesn't happen in the Pinbot machine. And, you know, it was smart on Rare, the developer of this game, to say, like, well, we probably could do a little more video game twist to it. And so they added the idea of levels to the game. And so what does it mean to have another level? It's not a completely different pinball map. It's not like the objectives change or whatever. It's just introducing new challenges and a completely different color scheme to the pinball machine. And the way to do this is essentially once you get a multi-ball, if you're able to score a solar bonus, go around the solar system, you will be able to then enter the next level of the playing field. And by level, what happens is like in level one, there are no threats to you other than losing your ball. But in level two, there is now this blob that travels around the solar system. And if it gets to the sun, there is a chance that it can eat your ball if you shoot it directly at it, which, spoiler alert, the sun is in the center of the screen. And so you're at a lot of danger if you shoot anywhere towards the center, because most likely it's going to eat your ball. So on and so forth for each other level. We don't have to get into them, but essentially level three adds a plane that flies around, and then eventually...
It can blow up your bumper.
Right. Yeah, they can blow up your...
That was kind of cool when I first saw that happen.
Yeah, I think level five or four makes it so that that same plane can now catch your ball too and take it away, which is also kind of terrifying from that standpoint of just something that like a shmup enemy that roams around the screen and now your ball is the thing that you don't want to be touched by it. All these things keep happening and they're cool, but the game takes it even a step further than that, but maybe not far enough in that in addition to these changing play fields, there is the ability to change your ball from a ball to a triangle to a cube. And yet, well, as cool as that sounds, they didn't make anything different. Like,
yeah, it feels like, the same.
It just feels the different. Same. It just looks different. And they definitely did not change the physics on it. I would have loved if the triangle like hit differently, you know, like if it hit the corners in a weird way that made it more likely to get a gutter, like the stakes are on, but in exchange, everything that you score is now five times higher or something like that. Like that would have made it worth it because again, a real pinball machine can't just start adding other shapes because it requires a ball to roll around on the screen. On a video game, it doesn't matter what it is. You're just telling it to act like a sphere.
It is programmed to work the same way. And, you know, coming from, you know, a modern game like Rocket League and seeing that all you got to do is change the shape of, you know, the ball and you have a completely different game, that being their version of rocket-powered car hockey, I was expecting a little more out of it. I mean, obviously not to the same level as Rocket League, but that was a little bit of a disappointment.
Yeah, it feels really like a missed opportunity for them to be decide to change the ball, but only to change it for aesthetic purposes, and then to decide from there that you know what everyone will love in an aesthetic choice is to make it a square. Like if you're gonna make it a square, like I get it if the physics are gonna be different, but if you just want to like, oh, what's a cool thing we can change it into? Like you could have picked anything. If you're not gonna change the physics, you're gonna pick a triangle, just a shape.
I think the whole like cube thing is just, oh, we're being cheeky.
Yeah.
Use other rare characters.
There you go.
But you know, all jokes aside on just the ball not changing and everything, I do think like, you know, we were literally in our last pinball episode, we were asking for this, and it's kind of funny that the very next game would deliver on it. Does it deliver full way, or does it kind of just give you like, yeah, I mean, that's definitely like something you can only do in a video game, but I don't know if it's enough.
Well, the ball changing gives me that vibe, but the other stuff I think is pretty cool, like having things flying around the screen, you know, because when I was first playing, I was trying to imagine, okay, like this is all stuff that could really happen in a pinball machine, but then like When I got to like the, I guess it's a plane. I thought it was like a bug or something, but the plane flying around, I was like, oh, what? Like that's definitely couldn't happen on a real pinball machine, but it makes it different. I love it. I wonder how people who like know this pinball machine felt about it. Like, you know, I wonder if purists were like, no, this isn't the experience. And kids that these days need so much stimulation.
And that's why I think that, you know, it can't have been hard. And I say that about a lot of things that are probably hard, but I mean it for this one. It can't have been hard to just have a sim mode and like a remix mode. Like just have a selection at the beginning of when you boot the game, have it be, this is the machine you know and love with NES simulation. And this is that machine with like subcategories of challenges that you can have. I think that's the only like big complaint I have.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that it can't have been hard because the first level already is that.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Like, so you can just like, you could just copy that first level and paste it as its own mode.
And so now that we've seen, at least on the NES scale of like video gamifying pinball machines, What's on the wish list now for pinball machines? What can we like put into fruition for the next pinball game we play?
They can more stop. More than one machine? I don't know. Yeah, they can stop as well.
Yeah, next time, synthesized voice and the ball keeps moving. I dare them to give that a try.
Well, you see, Mike, that it was impossible because of the memories.
Two ramps.
A spinning thing in the middle.
We had, you know, like a little bit of a like one-on-one pinball thing, but like what if there's just a full pinball machine that's one-on-one? Like just take this pinball machine, maybe you'd have to make it a little more symmetrical, but then just put flippers at the other side that player two is using, and I don't know how gravity works exactly in that, but you know, a full pinball machine with all these bells and whistles, but also two players.
Yeah, actually, Joe, that's the money idea, is that something that could definitely only be done in a video game. But all four players have their controllers, all four balls get launched at the same time, and so it's kind of like multi-ball, but you only score points for your own ball, and so you want to make sure that you knock other people's balls into the gutters.
Ooh.
And get your own ball up to the top where the highest scoring point things are.
How about a baseball game where you're the ball?
Don't give away our bet. That was supposed to be our $1 billion idea. Seriously, though, if somebody wants to make that, I'd play it.
I've got a semi-serious one here. Two players, asymmetrical. One person's playing pinball. The other person has the zapper and has to shoot the ball.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, like, shoot the enemies on the screen.
Or the enemies on the screen to protect the ball. Maybe there's two modes. One where it's like you as the pinball player are trying to keep the ball away from the hunter. And the other, the hunter is helping you shoot the planes.
I think that the ball would work only if it's not like you shoot the ball and it explodes, because there's way too many times where it just got some hang time and it's really slow. But like if you shoot the ball, it just like sort of fires off in a different direction.
Yeah, okay.
Why stop with just the zapper though? Why not include every NES accessory and get Rob and the power pad, get them all in there, the power glove, work them all in there somewhere. The power glove is actually like, you use that, and like how hard you like throw your hand is how hard it launches onto the, you know, so like you're rolling like dice, but it's the ball.
But I think this is like five different players. Like one person has a controller, one person has a zapper, one person controls like a little guy, and he's on the power pad. You got to run away from the ball.
And one is the DM.
Very good, Sean. On the sequels and spinoff side, there actually are some things to cover here, mostly related to the pinball machine, Pinbot, because that would get some other iterations, including one of my favorite pinball machines, Bride of Pinbot, which takes the concept that I was talking about, where, you know, it's you and the robot machine, and actually pitting you in a weird way, both helping and hurting each other. And that is what happens in Bride of Pinbot. Sean, I don't know if you played this one on the Pinball Arcade, but it was on there. And essentially, the way that works is, like, you're building the bride from scratch. So like when it first starts, it's just a robot with no features. And then by shooting up the ramps, the head turns and reveals like now she can speak. And then like you have to shoot your ball back up the ramp and get the ball to land in her eye socket. And then that ball locks there. And then you lock the other ball to get both eyes in there. And then she can see, and she keeps saying things, and like it's so great. And eventually, you know, you piece her together. But everybody else, like the even the pinball machine itself is like, I think she says, "I can speak," and the pinball machine's like, "Oh no!" Like, it's perfect. It's so fun and silly and campy, and it's a very easy to understand pinball machine. I think that's what sometimes even Pinbot is missing. Is like, yeah, it becomes clear with play, but like. Bride of Pinbot made it so clear right off the bat that you're building the bride, that it, you know, like that you understand what you have to do from there out. I think even one of my favorites, Tales of the Arabian Nights, has like a huge spinning lamp, which now that I'm thinking about it, maybe that was one of Sean's suggestions for how to make this game better, was add a big spinning wheel in the middle.
Yeah.
You know, it had a big spinning lamp, and like, yeah, you get it. Like, hit the lamp, it spins around, that's great, you're scoring lots of points. But then there's this whole other thing about, like, you know, collect the 7 jewels to make your scimitar strong enough to take down the genie and rescue the princess. It's like, that's crazy. Like, that is nuts, and that's great, and you'll learn that over time. But it's not as intuitive to the machine as Bride of Pinbot is. And Bride of Pinbot comes out in 1991, so not even when this video game version of Pinbot was released.
Well, I have a question just about, you know, the Pinbot deep lore. So when you boot up the game, you get like a little splash screen that says Pinbot in, you know, handwriting. And then there's this like cyberpunk woman with like a visor and, you know, just very, very female presenting. And I was under the impression that that was Pinbot. So I guess, who was that?
Right, and I'm not going to say that that woman looks exactly like Bride of Pinbot, but I didn't know that Bride of Pinbot came out in 1991, and so I would have thought, as somebody who played both of them, I would have thought that was Bride of Pinbot showing up and being like, huh, there is some lore here, but instead I think that's just a random robot.
Okay.
We will play another rare game that reuses Pinbot's engine in 1991, and it is called High Speed. It is based off of another pinball machine, just like how Pinbot was based off of a pinball machine. So get ready for that, I suppose, if you're excited for another video game pinball game. Did you say game twice in that regard? I don't think so. Okay. And then back to pinball, Jackbot became, in 1995, became the next successor. So you have Pinbot, Bride of Pinbot, and then I guess their son. Jackbot. I have not played this one, but it seems a little weird, and like it got off the rails a little bit because now it's got like this weird casino theme going on. And yeah, I guess Pinbot had this whole solar system theme going on, so none of them are even all that connected. It's just like, I guess the machines are built and then they got married after the fact, right? Like, you know, it's just like maybe you build Pinbot and then she's like, I'll just get married to the Pinbot machine.
Yeah, no, I'm losing the thread now.
And Sean, we've been talking a lot about Pinball Arcade, but I think it's worth mentioning, you know, not really a sequel or spinoff. It's worth mentioning that all of these machines were faithfully recreated in Pinball Arcade, but I use were because they lost the freaking license.
Wow.
So unless you bought the DLC a long, long time ago, you don't have access to these machines anymore. And that sucks.
It does suck.
There is a way, though, to play these, and it is on a, it's available on Steam. It's called Pinball FX, and if you have a semi-capable Windows computer, I suggest downloading Pinball FX if you're at all interested in like, how pinball games have advanced, because if you download it at 33 gigabytes,
oh my god,
all you have to do is just complete the tutorial at the beginning of the game, and it gives you a one-day pass to play all of their machines.
That's what I was going to say. The one thing I would warn people about if they haven't already explored, you know, more HD era pinball simulation is that it is the image of over monetization, where I think every single board is its own DLC, and I don't even remember how much they cost. And it's wild.
You will spend on Pinball FX, you would have to spend, I think, somewhere in the realm of $400 to $500 to have every pinball machine that they have in there, and that is stupid. But they're taking advantage of being the only supplier of the, like, they have the agreement with Williams, they have the agreement with Bailey or whatever.
It's the EA to the NFL.
It's just wild. Yeah, they also have just made up cabinets on there too that don't exist in real life. Like, there's a whole Star Wars line of pinball machines that are just, you know, only available in this video game form. That said, I that's why I was recommending it, is because you download the, you know, you download the game, you play the tutorial, you get the one day pass, and you'll probably be pinballed out in that one day. You probably won't have the itch to go back. And if you do, I'm really sorry, because I probably just cost you about $400 to $500. Last thing I want to say is that there is a website that you can, and I'll try to like link this somehow. There's a website that you can check out to just like type in the name of said pinball machine and find out if it's near you within like 100 miles or whatever. Turns out I actually have a Pinbot machine within 25 miles of me. So I might be going to Silverball Retro Arcade to check out the Pinbot machine in the flesh. And I think that's the episode, unless I forgot something.
I think we spoke about everything this game had to offer more longer than most people would play it.
Joe, did you say something?
We might have forgotten something.
But we've been doing this 300 times now. How could we forget?
How could we ever forget?
Yeah, how could
I guess you're right. Let's end it.
Yeah, couldn't possibly be. Oh, I know what we forgot.
What's that, Mike?
This is the 300th episode of Nostalgia.
Oh.
No, we remember.
That's the end of my contract.
Yeah, I got to talk to you guys about that, because we are definitely not like Major League Baseball, where the contracts just keep getting bigger. They're actually getting smaller.
I haven't been paid at all.
Interesting.
I have to tell you, in the 200th episode, I did
the game where we guessed.
The game where you guessed who said what. And Sean, you said that joke. That's the end of your contract in that episode.
There's no way I said that.
Remember how it was.
There's no way I said that.
You said that.
God damn it.
Sean, every 100 episodes, your contract ends. And I just didn't want to tell you because I didn't hope you'd notice.
I guess I just have, you know, things that are programmed into my brain, and I don't have any actual creativity.
You know what's actually crazier than the contract conceit is the fact that you do this without a contract, that you guys just show up we record on Wednesdays, and every Wednesday you guys just keep showing up, and we just keep recording episodes that then publish on Fridays. And every Friday, these same people just keep downloading the episodes and listening to them. And I'm thankful for both ends of that. I'm thankful for you guys for showing up on Wednesdays, and I'm thankful for the people who keep listening on Fridays. And heck, you know, it's practically Thanksgiving, so I'm just thankful for everything right now.
I'm thankful for you.
Aww. Yeah, you put this all together.
Guys, I don't know if you know this, but it literally is Black Friday when this episode comes out.
Oh, nice.
I was thankful for you yesterday.
Yeah, thank you. That's all I was trying to get at. Wasn't trying to say anything else, Joe. Joe, did you prepare anything else for us, though, or no?
Well, I thought we were going to do the essential games list first.
Is that what I forgot?
Oh, that might be God. What I forgot.
Well, you were joking that whole time, right?
That's so funny. Of course I was joking, Joe. It's a bit. It's okay.
I don't know. You're in the biz. I started to believe it myself.
You're in the biz. You know better. Yeah, we got to do that last thing, that thing we've done 299 times before. And heck, you know what? While I'm at it, since we've done it 299 times, I might as well give you guys some stats, okay? Going into the 299th episode.
Well, wait. Should we do the stats before or after we have the 300th to make it a nice round number?
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know what? Sorry, I'm going to keep you guys hanging. Please join us for the end of this episode with the Essential Games List. Is Pinbot the best pinball NES video game? That was weird. I should have said, like, the best NES pinball video game, right? You know, I don't know necessarily, because I kind of, like, I got hung up on the fact that it is based on a real pinball machine and then did things that the real pinball machine didn't. And then halfway through the episode, I started saying things like, that doesn't matter. And I started having an identity crisis of like, well, which one is it, Mike? you know, you're going to say this in the essential games list, and then you're saying this on the episode. So I don't think, like, whether I think it's the best version, I don't think that matters for the essential games list, because I'm not ready to put it on there yet. I don't think I'm ready to put a pinball game up against the rest, because pinball is its own thing. You know, it's similar to, like, would you put something that really put the power pad to use as, like, this was the best form of exercise in the 1990s and it was only available on the power pad. Like, would you put that on the essential games list just because it's the best workout game on the NES? Like, no, not every genre needs to be represented. And so I don't think Pinbot has really done anything to go above and beyond the pinball category. That said, it's a great pinball game on the NES. Sean?
I'm pretty much in complete agreement with that. I also don't think that every genre needs to be represented. I would never vote a visual novel onto the NES Essential Games list. I don't know if that's because there'll never be one, or just because I don't like them. But that's my point. Not essential. Still fun.
Joe.
I do think it's my favorite pinball game on the NES we've had so far as well. But yeah, none of them have really blown me away. They've all just been little curiosities, including this one. So, not essential.
All right, what a shame that we couldn't do it for the 300th episode. We couldn't just force the essential game just to get people talking, just to be like, hey, I heard they did something crazy on the 300th episode. Yeah, they put Pinbot on there. Didn't happen. So instead, I will just gift you guys with the current stats of where we're at with the Essential Games list. We have played 300 games, a reminder that there will be 673 officially licensed NES games, only in North America, of course. And so of those 300, that means that we have played through 44.58% of the catalog. Guys, we're not even halfway.
But we're pretty close to halfway.
Yeah, we're, like, closer than I thought we were to half.
Okay, halfway. Well, that's exciting. But I guess what I meant is like, we started the show in 2018, and it's been 5 years, and we're not halfway.
Right.
Of that, 30 games are on the Essential Games list, so a 10%. That's pretty good. That means that we should have 67 Essential Games when all things are said and done. I'm excited to find out what those other 37 will be.
That seems a little too perfect, you know? If there's 673, maybe we should like either bump it up to 68 or bring it down to 66. I don't like the perfect 1 to 10, you know.
Every 10 episodes we have an essential game.
Just feels like
the contract.
That's our guarantee.
Is that in the contract? Damn it.
And then yeah, that's our guarantee. That was what the Nintendo seal of quality actually was. It was saying
one of
that
10
like
of these will be
one in 10 of your purchases will be an essential game and you might score higher or lower. We also have a category that we call play it, where we thought they were good games, just not good enough to get into the essential. And that one we're still picky about because that has 61 play its. So 20.33% for a total of 30.33% of the games we have played, less than one third of the games we have played, we have enjoyed.
I'll also just note that this is an unofficial stat and it comes from Mike just sort of feeling out the vibe of the conversation, I think, because we don't have that as like an official thing that we say.
Right. I think like sometimes we've said it, but like I'll say that there are definitely, for me particularly, a lot of games that I would consider a play that you guys and Sam wouldn't, just because I feel like I'm, I don't know, a little more infatuated with games sometimes.
Yeah, I feel like it all averages out. Like there's probably a bunch of shmups in the play it that Joe wouldn't have put his play it. So, you know, it all evens out. But that means that 209 games that we have played on this podcast, that's two-thirds of the podcast, have just been skip-its, things that we don't ever intend to play or talk about again. And so aren't you glad
sounds,
I made you do the show?
That's what I was going to say. Like, you know, in some ways, this is, like, committing to this show has been one of the biggest wastes of time in my life.
Of all the genres that we've played, we have played the most in the arcade genre. We have played 48 games that are classified as arcade. Of those, 33 skip-its, 14 play-its, and just one essential.
What was the essential again?
You know, you're making me think. I was hoping you wouldn't put me on the spot like that, but I'm gonna try and grab it as fast as I can. Talk amongst yourselves when you think about what it could be.
How much time do you think you've wasted, Joe?
Mock writer. How much time do I think I've wasted? I've wasted a lot of time trying to convince you guys that Zelda 2 is essential.
I don't hear what you're saying right now. You're kind of breaking up a little bit.
Balloon Fight.
Balloon Fight.
Oh, I was going to say that, but I wasn't thinking of that as an arcade game.
Yeah,
but of
course I think it fits into the arcade more than the action. Yeah.
I agree.
Yep. And then surprising... Oh, wait. Now, what am I talking about? Sports has the biggest genre, obviously. That's 46 skip-its, 9 play-its, 2 essential games.
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And the 2 essential games?
2 essential
take a guess?
Is still shocking to me.
Take a guess?
Tecmo Bowl.
Tecmo Bowl. Yeah.
Do we count Mike Tyson as sports?
Oh, yeah.
We did.
There it is.
Yeah.
There it is. You guys are good at this. Okay. Now, the 4 essential shmups.
Terra Cresta.
Okay.
Gradius.
Guardian Legend.
Oh, you know, I didn't have that in the shmup one because it's half and half.
Yeah, it's half.
But
half
no,
half.
I'm giving it to you. So actually, there's 5 then in that case.
What was the one that we really
Twin
liked?
B or...
No. You're thinking of Stinger, but Joe, we took that off.
Stinger. That's right.
I forgot the other two.
Life Force.
Yes.
Mm. And then, you know, I can't really think of a bigger hint than this, but it has Wanted posters in it.
Oh, I was going to say that. I thought we took that off, too.
No, Gun.Smoke, we put it on. We added it. It was never on before that. We added it in our Best of 89.
I guess that's also like a run and gun.
It's auto-scrolling,
No, it's auto-scrolling, yeah. I feel like it's a shmup, yeah.
All right, whatever.
We know Joe's biggest regret in the show is that Zelda 2 isn't on the essential games list. But Sean, do you have a biggest regret?
I feel like most of the things that I say, I wish I could take back. So I don't know if there's a biggest, but there's a lot of them.
All right, good answer. And then Joe, I'm sorry if I spoke for you, but is there anything else you wanted to say for that?
Bigger regret? I don't know. I've got other things that I regret, but I'm definitely the most vocal about Zelda 2.
And then the last thing, we've recorded the episode for Super Mario Bros. 3. It's available. It's already one of our most played episodes because everybody, I guess, got word that we were doing it. And more people than subscribe to this show listen to that episode. And so that's kind of funny. But now that Super Mario Bros. 3 is out of the way, what's the game you're most looking forward to in our future?
I mean, in the near future, it's Final Fantasy. In the far future... or the mid future, you know, I'll have to get back to you. But I mean, we also got like we got Snake's Revenge coming up, even though that's not like
that's the big episode 301 next week, Sean.
That's true. So I'm looking forward to that.
It's the 301st episode spectacular next week. Don't miss it.
Yeah, Final Fantasy is also like the one that I've been looking forward to since the very beginning. Yeah, other than that, I don't know. There's a lot of things that I just can't think of right now. Maybe Color of Dinosaur.
Well, yeah, Color of Dinosaur is definitely up there. I've been wanting to play this game since you first started the podcast.
All right, Joe, it's my understanding that you might have built another game like you did for the 200th episode that we can have here for the post show.
That's correct. I'm thinking maybe an every 100 episode thing.
Well, we say enough stupid things to warrant it.
You know, I'm disappointed. I don't know if like I got as many stupid things that were said, but they're all, you know, I feel like they'll be good challenges. There's some interesting stuff we talked about. But yeah, last time you guys got 15 points out of a possible 30.
I'd say that's pretty good.
This time there are 36 possible points, so I think you guys should shoot for more than 18 points to beat that 50%.
So, Joe, to those that may not have listened to the 200th episode game, can you explain what the game is?
So what we're doing, even though I know everybody listened to that episode, you know, it wouldn't skip an episode, but what we're doing is I have I have a quote from an episode, and I'll be asking either to identify who said the quote, identify which episode it was from, or both for 2 points. I also have on here a little extra bonus round of just the back of the box. Just guess which game this back of the box is. So
I like
a couple
that.
Of those too. But yeah, I mean that's really it. I'll keep track of your points, see if you can beat it. Last time we did, a friend of the show, Mark Pasqualato, actually answered the questions first, and we tried to see if you could beat him. This time, you're trying to beat your former selves.
I like it. I like it. Now, should we also give a little time maybe for the listeners as well? Just not answer right away. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think that you guys, discuss. Yeah, you know? You got to come to a conclusion yourself between each other, too. So, but all right, I'm going to start out with this first one. And for this one, you will be giving the person who said it and also the game that it was from. Each one is worth 1 point, so 2 points total. Here's the quote. I mean, I can kind of feel myself fading away, ha ha ha. Like the picture in the game and movie, because this was not good, and it's getting not a vote for essentialness from me.
All right, that's Sean.
But okay,
we should discuss a little. I don't know, I feel like you could say, I feel myself fading away. That feels like a Sean vibe.
I don't know, I feel like in certain situations you might say the same thing. I don't know if I've said essentialness.
Essentialness.
Maybe I have.
Yeah.
Maybe I have.
Joe, can I get this? Can I get after the fade away what was said?
Okay, after fade away. Ha ha ha. Like the picture in the game and movie. Because this was not good, and it's getting not a vote for essentialness from me.
Okay, it's Sean, and it's got to be from, like, a very recent episode, like Ghostbusters 2, because that has Viggo with the portrait, and it was also in the movie.
No.
No?
No.
You don't think you said that recently?
I mean, it would track.
Other movies with portraits. Other movies with portraits in them. That's just weird, right? Ghostbusters 2 had one.
Sure, let's go with that.
All right, Sean and Ghostbusters 2.
Okay, so for Sean, that is correct. That is 1 point. Ghostbusters 2, unfortunately, incorrect. The answer is Back to the Future.
Oh, the picture. Yes. Oh, my God. Wow, so Ghostbusters 2 ripped off Back to the Future with the fading picture concept. Although,
I don't even know what you're talking about. Ghostbusters we just played Ghostbusters. All right.
Well, because we just played it can't be eligible?
No, I mean, I don't remember a picture in Ghostbusters 2.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You don't fight Viggo in Ghostbusters 2. You just get to see the picture of him.
I see. Okay. Moving on.
All right, moving on. It's not that I don't know the difference between the shape of the letter E and a cake mixer.
Okay, this is definitely I can remember. Sorry. Yeah,
that's Joe. That's a Joe thing, right? Or you think it's a you?
Are we all candidates, or is it just between Mike and I?
Anyone who's ever been on the show is a candidate.
Okay.
I think that's a Joe thing.
It does sound very witty and very Joe-like.
Right. And
unlike us.
Now, it's a trap because it seems like it's for Sesame Street, but I think it's for Fisher-Price.
Yeah, Fisher-Price, I can remember.
I can remember, or Perfect Fit, right? Isn't it Perfect Fit? With the, where you're... Hold on, Joe. The quote again, please.
It's not that I don't know the difference between the shape of the letter E and a cake mixer.
Yeah, so I think it's Perfect Fit, where you're putting the things into the slots, and they were Fisher-Price toys.
I thought that was I Can Remember.
No, I Can Remember is the memory game, where you just have to keep flipping tiles.
But that had Fisher-Price toys as well. But I guess you're right. Okay, we'll go with Perfect Fit, and we'll go with Joe.
All right, final answers?
Yep.
Correct on both accounts, so that's two. You're up to 3 points.
Very good.
Total. Now, this next one, in reference to the same game, so you're just guessing who said it, somebody said, I played competitively.
That's also Joe, right?
Yeah,
I think he was the only one who played competitively.
Correct. That was also Joe.
4 points. Let's keep going.
All right, you guys are on a roll. Okay. It sounds like a company that, like, usually makes fragrances and just wanted to try their hand at video games.
Fragrances? Well,
yes.
That's definitely a weird me thing. I feel like I say that. I feel like I talk about developer stuff more than anybody. But what would have been the company?
Does it sound French-ish?
Yeah. Oh, but you know what? I think I know what this is.
What is it?
This is that game Joe loved. The Zapper game that he, like, bought and then kept playing for, like, weeks after the fact.
Oh, the Journey to Earth or...
Yeah, To the Earth.
To the Earth?
Yeah, and I think the developer was French or something, and they just did... This was, like, the only game they ever made.
I wouldn't... But you wouldn't have said that about French. It would have been... Oh, the word was French, not the actual word being the word French. Okay.
Right. They're not...
Let's go with Mike to the Earth.
To the Earth is correct. However, it was Sean that said
but we're good, the same person.
Good memory on the... Because it was Cirque Verte or something was the...
That's weird. I don't remember saying that at all.
All right, moving on. Yeah, it's Quentin Tarantino's version of soccer. Now, I will take... There are two possible answers for the game that I will accept.
Right. Now, I think, because I know where that was going, and so I think we said in an episode teasing to another episode the actual line, but the game I was referring to, of course, was Captain Tsubasa 2 Super Striker, which we played for the Nostalgia Bites podcast, but I couldn't tell you which game I would have teed that up for in exchange.
Yeah. Okay.
But it was me and Captain Tsubasa 2.
Final answer?
Sean, is it our final answer?
No, yeah, that's definitely correct. It would be fun to also know the other, like the game that we pitched it on, but yeah. I don't think we know that.
Well, correct on all accounts, so I'll give you 2 points there. The game, I don't think there was really any chance that you would have gotten it, is Road Blasters.
Okay.
Just happened to be the game that you pitched, Captain. You
I barely remember Captain what Road Zubato. Blasters even is.
Who does?
That should be the next question, just to really screw us up.
Yeah. Sputnik's Picking Up the Signal.
Okay, so that's a back of the box, or no? It's like
no, that's a quote.
Sputnik is picking up the signal.
Okay, right. So it has to do with the Cold War. So I would hope.
Or space. Yeah, space more likely. Damn, that's tough.
I don't know on either.
Yeah, that would have been another one where I would have said like To the Earth or something. You know, like I'm thinking of recent space games.
So we may
who would have said it?
Guess, yeah.
Yeah, no, but we should think about who would have said that. So, Joe, what's the quote again?
Sputnik's Picking Up the Signal.
Sean, I feel like you're the only one who would have name-dropped Sputnik.
Name-drop Sputnik, as if it's like a reference. No, like a reference to something that people don't know about.
I just feel like me and Joe wouldn't have a reason to bring that up.
Okay, fine. We'll say it was me. And
no. It's like you know, you also say things, so you can tell us.
I do say things. I mean, you know, I don't particularly know if I said that one thing, but let's say
Sean, and let's say like Astyanax.
Sure.
It was Sean.
Wow.
But it was not Astyanax. It was not space related. It was Tetris.
Okay. That's perfect. Right. Because
we were talking about how there were conspiracy theories that like the Russians were using the cartridge to spy on us. And we were asking like how did they think that they wasn't hooked up to the internet? Like how like so we talked about like were they breaking into our house to like pick up the cartridge or was Sputnik picking up the signal?
All right, that actually makes a lot of sense. Thanks, Joe.
You got it. That's what I'm here for. All right, here's a longer one. And there's a name in here which I will not say, so, you know, ignore the redacteds.
Okay.
Who could forget the classic chase scene between Redacted and the Killer Bees? Or the Looney Tune hijinks where Redacted throws a bowling ball at that girl with the hula hoop? Or when Redacted fought over 100 thugs at the diner?
So this is okay. Definitely Back to the Future. Again, yeah, Back to the Future, and I think it's Mike because it flows too well for it to be me, or it's either you or it's either
yeah,
Mike or
Joe was poking a lot of fun at Back to the Future as well, so that was my hesitation. But we haven't had a me yet, so I was thinking this would be me. But are we sure it's Back to the Future and not Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
It's 100% Back to the Future.
Okay. All right, so me and Back to the Future.
Correct and correct. And we also have had a you for a...
Well, it's good that I forgot that, because it convinced me that it was me.
All right, moving on. Fact Xana do what Zelda don't.
That had to be...
That's gotta be me. The only question is...
It's too dad jokey.
You're only guessing who, because obviously it's on the Facts Xana episode.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. The intro, back in the box.
I'm going to take a celebrity shot here, though, too, and say that I said that on the Essential Games List portion of the episode.
So we're going with Mike?
Yes.
Mike, and it was said on the Essential Games List portion.
Okay, well, that will just be for pride if you get that right. But it was not Mike. It was also not Sean. Big shock twist here.
Was it Sam?
Me.
Wow,
it was me.
Joe. Do what Zelda don't. Wow.
But Zelda don't. But here's the thing. Immediately following that, I said, but that's not true. I just thought it was a funny joke. I didn't actually believe that.
You immediately covered your tracks. I see. Okay.
Yes.
Damn. You did vote it on the Essential Games List.
I did vote it on the Essential Games List.
How many points do we have?
You have, let's see, 1, 2, 3.
This is very scientific.
10 points.
Okay, we're doing great. We're going to get to 18.
Yeah, we're getting there.
And the game's over. No, I'm just kidding. Next quote. You have to be given the choice to do what the game is about. Even though you putting the cartridge or disc in your system and deciding to interact with the controller is you giving your consent for the game to happen to you.
Okay, why do I see now, like, at first I thought it was a me thing, and then when it got to the consent part, I was like, it's a Sean thing.
No, I think this is a you or Joe thing, and it's for Dragon Quest or something.
Dragon Warrior, interesting. Okay, Joe, one more time the quote.
You have to be given the choice to do what the game is about. Even though you putting the cartridge or disc in your system and deciding to interact with the controller... Is you giving your consent for the game to happen to you?
Yeah.
Okay, so explain to me why it's Dragon Warrior.
Because this is... I remember talking about this, and so maybe it might have been me, but this is just a thing in like Japanese RPGs. Like, there's this motif... Not motif. There's this trope of there being choices to play the game. Like, do you accept this quest?
You're right. And at the end of Dragon Warrior, you can actually join the evil dragon guy, and then it's like, the game will let you.
Yeah. But I would have meant. But, I mean, maybe, I don't know who said this.
So it's Dragon Warrior, and,
It doesn't have enough words. Concise.
Yeah, it doesn't have enough words for it to be you. I'm gonna say it was me again and Dragon Warrior.
Sean, the reason I think you have such an opinion on this is because it was you that said this.
God damn it!
And it was not Dragon Warrior. It was Magic of Scheherazade.
Okay. All right. Well,
but yeah, what you described is exactly what you're talking about. Is that like you have to get the call to action and accept it, even though it's like, yeah, I'm here.
Well, we got points for vibe.
no vibe points. In this game.
No. Okay. There's two kind of quotes here that go together. So the first one being. Just think of how they'll be able to print one extra word in the manual because they didn't use it on the box. And then later in the episode, the same person says, just think of how many more words he'll be able to name his kid because he's not using his last name.
Okay. That is just funny. All right. I just want to say sometimes this podcast hits. Okay. And that is like out of context, really funny. So it can't be me. That's for sure.
It's Joe. I don't know what game that is. I think right. It's Joe, though.
I think it's Joe. It's very witty. And then, okay. So they left something off in the manual.
No, it's the back of the box didn't have much.
The back of the box didn't have
much. Or maybe it was the manual.
Think about how much they'll save by adding an extra word somewhere else. What? Joe, one more time, please.
Just think of how they'll be able to print one extra word in the manual because they didn't use it on the box. And then just think of how many more words he'll be able to name his kid because he's not using his last name.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I really don't know the game, but I'm going to just take a stab in the dark and say codename Viper and Joe.
Okay.
Okay, it was me, but it was not codename Viper. It was Al Unser Jr. And on the back of the box, and I'm blanking now, but it was something about, like, it said, like, experience, what was Alan Sajid? It was a racing game, yes. Right?
Yeah, it was a racing game. I'm able to pull it up.
Like you've never experienced. And Mike thought there should say never experienced it. And we were going back and forth on why the it wasn't there. So that's when I said that. And then like later on, we talked about how Al Unser Jr. And then like, it also said that he was sometimes called Al Jr. And we were talking about like, was it really necessary to take out his last name?
Yes. Now, Joe, the back of the box was get ready for racing action like you've never experienced it. And I think what happened was that it wasn't the problem, but it was saying it like you've never experienced it. It should have been like you've never experienced before. It's saying get ready for racing action as if it's your very first time is the way the back of the box is wording it.
It is weird wording.
Sure. All right. Next up. I lost the plot of the G there for a second because I'm not used to seeing them like that.
Okay, that is again Fisher Price perfect fit. And I don't know if that sounds like a me thing because Joe had the kick thing or whatever. So I'm going to go me perfect fit. I don't know why I remember that, but I'm pretty sure that there were letters that you could. And what happened was the G came in upside down or something for me, and I think this is a very personal experience.
No, I think you're 100% right, yeah.
Me, perfect fit.
Correct on both accounts.
You have a very
I remember
clear
that
memory.
Playing the game. Yeah, I remember playing the game and that G coming down and having that thought.
I knew that one would stick with you. I knew that was like burned into your memory. All right, next, this one's just for the game. Just because I don't think there's really much contextually that'll tell you who said it.
Okay.
So the quote is, I was just hoping we wouldn't talk about the book again, so I wouldn't have to sound like I hadn't read it.
I mean, I think that's, I don't know. Book again.
We played video games based on books?
Is it the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde? No, is this only the last 100 episodes?
It is, actually. Okay. I didn't mention that at the beginning, but I've only gone from the last... since the last time we've done this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Didn't want to mention that I haven't read the book again. I just can't even think about games that we played that were based off books. Can you give the quote one more time?
I was just hoping we wouldn't talk about the book again, so I wouldn't have to sound like I hadn't read it. Full disclosure, those last, like, four words... Somebody else is talking also, and I'm not exactly sure if those... Like, that's my best approximation of what...
Okay, yeah. So here's a weird thing, because I brought it up earlier, and Who Framed Roger Rabbit did have, like, it was a book that, like, there was, like, several... First it was a book, and then there was a sequel for the book.
But we ever talked about the book?
Yeah, we did, in the sequels and spinoff section. It was, like, a whole thing. But I'm not really confident about that.
I'm not confident that we would have an opportunity to talk about the book again.
Right, or that I was saying, like, you know, I wasn't sure that I would, you know, because I think it's me who said it. So I guess I'm saying, like, I didn't read the books or I don't know enough about the books to answer your questions.
All right, let's go with Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and then we need some context, Joe.
It is not Who Framed Roger Rabbit. It was me, even though that doesn't matter. And the game was The Adventures of Tom Sawyer.
Oh, my God. Wow. I mean, because, like, I kind of knew that, but, like, at the same time, I thought that was so long ago.
That was so long ago.
Yeah.
The thing I was hoping would give it away is that, like, I feel like I wouldn't be, like, talking like I'm embarrassed to have not read Roger Rabbit.
No, because that's, like, an American
classic.
Like,
Tom Sawyer is at least, like, yeah.
I haven't read it either. It's okay.
Yeah.
Adventures of Tom Sawyer is episode 203. So that's crazy. That, yeah, it really was.
2 years close. Ago.
Yep.
All right, next one. A little interesting they decided to go with ABC instead of 456, the natural progression of numbers.
Okay, well, that's Sesame Street ABC because we played 1, 2, 3 first, and then they had
sounds
ABC.
Like Joe.
But that, yeah, that's not good enough to, like, that's not witty enough for me, so.
You're so down on your wit.
Yeah, well, you know, you are the fast talker, okay? You're the guy who says such classic lines.
Not on the podcast.
Yeah, you're
on
the
podcast,
guy who,
I have stage fright.
No. Didn't you say recently, and I quote, I think just recently Baja Blast entered the public domain. They're making a Baja Blast horror film now.
I did say that, but I feel like those are few and far between.
Interesting. Okay. So Sesame Street ABC, and I'm going to say me, actually. You know what? Because Joe's got me second guessing myself.
Okay.
Well, this is why you always believe in yourself, because it was you, Mike.
Aw. Yay.
But we're getting towards the late game here, and I'm not being merciful anymore. It was not Sesame Street ABC. It was NFL, where we were teasing Sesame Street ABC coming up the next week.
Wow. That's really, I mean, like, that is
that's
unforgiving,
mean.
But
wow.
I appreciate
yes.
it.
Okay. Coming up. Always be closing, doofus. Everyone farts.
Wow, these are really hard. And this is now, like, this is the part where I'm saying, like, thank you all for listening to the podcast, despite what we say.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I would make a Glengarry Glen Ross reference. I don't know how prone to those you guys are. That's the only reason I would say it's me. But
I didn't even know there was a Glengarry Glen Ross reference. So
always be closing?
Yeah, I didn't know.
Oh. I don't know why there would be farts after that.
Yeah, this is a great one.
Do you want to hear the whole thing again?
Yeah.
Always be closing, doofus. Everyone farts.
Everyone farts.
I don't know.
It's not like everyone farts as like a stage action. It's like, yeah, John, it's you who said it.
I probably said it. I don't know what context. I don't know what game.
Pick a game.
Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah, Wheel of Fortune. There you go.
All right, we sticking with Sean, Wheel of Fortune?
Sure.
Yep.
It was Sean. Now, I was hoping the always be closing, what is that commonly abbreviated to?
Is it Sesame Street ABC?
Oh,
it's Sesame Street ABC, and I asked you, you said ABC always be closing, and I asked you if you could continue that for the rest of the alphabet, and you got as far as always be closing, doofus, everyone farts.
Wow,
darn it. Wow, you're picking some really good ones. Now I feel better about that quote, though. Like, at first I was like thanking the audience for sticking with us. Now I'm like, yeah guys, we give you the best.
Yeah, that's intelligent.
Like,
yeah. All right. Next up. If I were a child or teenager or adult or elderly person or I hadn't been born yet and thinking about playing a game on a peripheral, I'd like to think I would have had to pay good money to buy that game. So maybe it's a bargain.
Oh my gosh.
We also say complete word salad at times.
Yeah, okay. One more time, Joe.
If I were a child or teenager or adult or elderly person or I hadn't been born yet and thinking about playing a game on a peripheral, I would have had to pay good money to buy that game.
Okay, now,
so maybe it's a bargain.
The fact that we went on such a journey and the beginning of the sentence doesn't mesh well with the end of the sentence, I want to say it's me again. I usually take you on those trips where the
funny,
sentences don't make any sense.
I was thinking it was Joe.
I mean, it's
I do
possible.
That a lot, too.
Okay. I mean,
just because of the whole, like, you know, like covering all the bases, children, teenager, not born yet. Like, would you say dead, not though. Born yet?
I don't know. I probably would have mentioned dead.
Not been. Oh, you're asking.
Oh, it's Joe. He just gave it away.
No, 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 he was just asking. That's what I said. All right, but what's the game? Must have been expensive, or
I mean, no, it was a peripheral based game.
Okay.
And it must not have been used very often. So I don't know. Not one of the Robs, obviously.
I want to point you to the last part of the sentence. So maybe it's a bargain.
So maybe it's
just think of what that could be.
Oh, wait. Okay. Is it that Miracle Piano system?
Oh.
Where I, you know, because I've actually paid for that. And then
yeah.
Yeah.
You did pay for that.
Yep.
So maybe it's you.
No, it's not me, though.
Okay.
I think it's still Joe, but Miracle Piano Teaching System.
Let's do that.
That is a no on both accounts. It was Sean. Although I feel like this has been a Sean-heavy like answer. I didn't realize until now. But I do think that I'm more word vomity than Sean normally. But also, it was short order slash explode. The bargain thing being because it was two games in one.
Two games in one. Yeah, I don't remember that game.
Was there a peripheral that we used?
Dance pad.
The power pad.
Okay.
Right. You know, it's funny. It's like one of those things now where like we could have just picked Sean every time. We'd probably be scoring better than what we are now.
I think we've been okay.
What are we at? Are we at even close to 18 anymore?
Let's see. 15.
Okay, we're close.
How many more possible points?
Oh, that's it.
Eight.
Oh, okay.
Okay, we can do it. We can do it.
Eight more possible points. The last one is worth 3.
All right. Joe, believe in yourself. I mean, Sean, believe in yourself. But also, Joe, believe in yourself.
Another one with a redacted name coming up here. Try to do your best to figure out what he said and think like redacted. Maybe you can be the third guest speaker on this episode.
Huh.
Try to figure out what he said and think about redacted?
Think like redacted.
Think like redacted.
Maybe you could be the third guest speaker on this podcast.
Episode. Not that it matters, but...
I feel like it's a me quote.
Yeah, that sounds right.
But what would be the game?
Did we do a bit where we had guest speakers?
We never. Oh, you know what? Actually, yeah. Hold on. Now it's all coming. It's all.
Okay.
I'm remembering. Is it? I can remember. You know, the Fisher Price I Can Remember episode when we got a little silly with it, and I started like calling you a different name during the Essential Games List vote. Do you remember that? Like.
I guess I remember. You saying like Sam? I think maybe you said Sam.
Yeah, and then for Joe, I didn't even say I was like Jonathan or something. All right, that's my best guess. Fisher Price, I Can Remember.
It is Mike. It is not Fisher Price, I Can Remember. It was Chess Master.
Wow, what was the context?
And what
Joe?
Happened there was I was on the episode with you guys, but my file didn't record. My microphone didn't record. So this was Mike's, like, in fact, maybe this is a little unfair to Sean because he probably never heard this.
No.
But Mike came on at the beginning of the episode and explained that, like, Joe was on this episode. He's not in it now, so you might hear us reference him. I tried to cut around it. Try your best to figure out what he said and think like Joe. Maybe you can be the third guest speaker on this episode. But like, yeah, you guys were talking to each other, and I had been in the conversation.
I forgot about
but
that.
But nobody could hear me.
Yeah, that's pretty wild that happened.
Must have been a great episode for everybody to listen to.
Yeah. All right, let's jump into a couple of back of the boxes. We got 4 back of the box things. They're all very, very generic. So these are going to be tough ones. That was 1 extra point. So what, you're at 16 right now?
All right,
now?
So we just need two correct.
You need 2 points. Now, like I said, the final question will be worth 3 points. So if you don't get any of these, at least you still got that final question. The first one, nobody ever said it would be easy.
That it's gotta be, it's like a beat 'em up or like something that where like the vibe is that it's supposed to be like cool. It's cool.
Right. Okay.
So maybe like not Double Dragon.
I was thinking Double Dragon 2 for a second when you were like beat him up, but you're right. Like
maybe River City Ransom?
That I feel like that's that's kinda. What about Rescue the Embassy Mission?
Oh, okay. That, like, you that know,
like nobody ever said that rescue would be easy. Like,
I don't know.
Yeah, that's tough. But that could also be like Abadox, right? That game where you're like inside.
It could be any game.
Yeah, yeah. Let's do rescue. I just think that's cool. I think that has more connective tissue.
It is not Rescue the Embassy Mission. It is Sky Shark.
Sky Shark.
Okay, yeah. Nobody kind of ever said that this would be easy. Yeah.
Next one. Something Deadly in the Air.
Sky Shark.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like another shark.
They're all Sky Sharks. Same back, different back of the box.
Something Deadly in the Air.
Something Deadly in the Air. Cybernoid? The Fighting Machine? Twin Eagle?
Yeah, let's go that. Twin Eagle.
Twin Eagle? Oh, wait. Yeah, Twin Eagle.
It was, in fact, Stealth ATF.
Gosh darn it.
It's tough.
Strategy really that hurts.
Strategy that hurts. Conflict, like, is it maybe?
That's an interesting one. But Joe wasn't on that episode, so would he listen to it?
Oh, I mean, who am I to judge?
Was I not on Conflict?
I don't think you were.
I'm thinking of Anticipation from like 2 years ago.
Strategy that hurts.
Do you think it would be a strategy game?
I would hope so, but you're right. It's not requisite.
Strategy that hurts.
I don't know what would make it hurt though.
Is it like Chess Master? I would have never thought of that game, but Joe used it earlier.
What about the black and white game?
What's the black and white game?
Yeah. The one I like, the one Joe really likes.
Oh, the chess-like game.
Yeah.
What is that game called?
It's on the Essential Games list. I really like it.
No, come on. It's on the Essential Games list, Sean. You gotta remember it if you like it. I remember now. It has a name that also my medicine balls have at my gym. Archon.
Yeah.
It is Archon. Oh, it is wow. Archon. It really is medicine balls at your gym.
See, I knew. I just
very good.
Didn't
very
know
good.
No.
Is it that black and white?
You guys are 1
game?
Point away from tying, which isn't winning. So, 1 point away from tying, 2 points away from winning.
Okay.
Next question. Your next move could be your last.
Move could be that's like Adventures of Lolo 2, because you sometimes get into like fail states where you have to commit suicide.
That's too self-aware though.
Yeah, no, I know. There's no way they wouldn't be that dark on it. Lolo. Your next step could be your last. Oh wait, that's like Shadowgate, right? Because you always die in that game. There's so many creative ways to die. Yeah,
let's go with Shadowgate.
Shadowgate
for the tie. It was Shadowgate.
Wow. Yeah, all right.
So if you want to win, you got to answer this final question, which is arbitrarily at this point worth 3 points.
Doesn't matter.
You only need 1 point to win.
Okay.
So this is going to be a quote by all 3 of us. You just got to tell me, you know, where it's from, obviously not who it is. I'll tell you who said it. Part. Yes. Mike said, "A chronological exploration of every king and queen in Great Britain." To which Sean replied, "It has to be, we still have to not do any research. We'll just kind of look at them and judge them by that." To which I replied, "We can just judge how their decisions hold up today, too, without considering the time period."
Okay, so Sean, hear me out. Let's lose on purpose, so this way next 100 episodes, it's not so hard. If we win now, right, we'll have to get even more points to beat ourselves in the future.
No, I need to play to win. I play to win the game.
I know.
You got to improve.
Chronological exploration of every king and queen. Well, that makes it sound like I was saying like the show's over and we're going to do a new show.
Yeah, we did that. We made that joke.
Yeah, that was the April Fool's episode, but that was not like that was
canon. That wasn't canon.
Yeah, well, we didn't say king and queen on that one. We didn't do that.
Okay.
Hey, it doesn't have to be canon.
Wait, what was that?
Something you said.
It's that April Fool's episode, then.
What did we talk about during the April Fool's
episode? It was the 10-yard fight remaster.
Oh, okay, so yeah. All right, 10-yard fight remaster.
Is that your final answer?
I literally couldn't think of anything else.
To win the game or lose the game, it was not the 10-yard fight remaster. You guys are going to hate me.
It was Dash Galaxy and the Alien Asylum.
No, it was the Boss Rush podcast interview we did.
No. I knew he would make it. I knew he would make it impossible.
It was the last question. It was worth 3 points. It's got to be a hurdle.
Yeah, I know. Wow. I know. Okay. So, yeah, okay. For those unaware, we did an interview with Celeste on the Boss Rush podcast, and I'm sure we made the same kind of stupid jokes that we make on this show. So if you love those, then you'll love watching that interview.
I've got a mustache.
The good news is you guys tied.
Yeah, we did exactly what I wanted us to do.
Yeah.
All right, here's
the problem is apparently each year I'm adding more questions. So to just
it'll
tie,
be easier,
you have to technically answer more questions right.
Okay, so episode 400, just make it one question.
One question.
So that we have to get 100% or nothing.
All or nothing.
Whatever. All right, well, I'm happy with tying the record.
For those wondering, the 400th episode is Werewolf the Last Warrior, and that sounds pretty heckin' awesome.
You guys better just pay attention to all the goofy things you say for these next 100 episodes.
Also, when you get a chance, look at the box for Werewolf the Last Warrior. What the hell is going on there? Check that out, guys, when you get a chance.